Hello, everyone, and guess what? It's time for another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week I bring you exciting new guests to talk about various aspects of this enormously complex field of UFOs and the paranormal. And there is so much going on right now. I hope you enjoyed our show last week when our guest was Miriam Delicato. She is a lady from Canada who has been experiencing an enormous amount of UFO contact, which most of which she remembers consciously. So very amazing story. She wrote a book called Blue Star, and it reveals prophecies given to her not only by the ETs, but that seem to parallel with some of the Hopi Indian prophecies. So it's a pretty interesting book, and boy, I had a lot of fun speaking with her. I hope you did too. Tonight, we're going into a slightly different direction. Not that different, though. Our guest tonight is Joseph Palermo, and he's got quite a paranormal biography, let me tell you. Tonight, we are going to be talking about his research into the so-called Chupacabra, and he actually worked with the History Channel's very popular, groundbreaking program, Monster Quest, and was interviewed because he actually produced a documentary on this subject called Chupacabras, The Legend Begins. So that's going to be mostly what we're talking about tonight. But our guest, Joseph Palermo, has a lot of other things to say about various aspects of the paranormal. He's really my favorite kind of guest, someone who embraces various aspects of the paranormal, not just one piece of it, and kind of throws all the other away. Let me see, his biography. He was born in 1958 in St. Louis, Missouri, and at the age of 14 in 1972, he and his neighborhood friends actually saw a UFO just south of the local airport, and he was already at this time beginning to prepare for making his first film, and this was so his career was set from an early age, it sounds like. And later in 1976, he apparently had a Bigfoot sighting. Now we'll have to hear about that because I had one of my own, so I think this is just fascinating. And he also became very involved in UFO research and had a big influence in his local area and has produced a number of documentaries, like Walking the Walk with the Paranormal is another one, and just has a lot of experience with the paranormal, including possible ghost sighting. And he has been a guest on numerous radio shows, as well as, again, working with the History Channel on Monster Quest. So we're going to be talking about a lot of interesting stuff tonight. So get your hats on and get ready for a really exciting ride. Joseph, thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Preston, thank you for having me, and good evening to our listeners.
So, wow, you've had quite a career here in the paranormal. Ever since an early age, were you always interested in this kind of stuff?
I tell you what, it started and it hasn't stopped since, Preston. It made me have to take an interest in it. You know, it wouldn't leave me alone. I mean, I felt the need to get my filmmaking training and hone those skills because I, like you were saying in the promo there, I did my first film when I was 14. And my peers really enjoyed it, and it was really the first thing that I ever did that I got such a positive response from my peers. I was always the smallest kid in school. I was always, last one picked on the, whatever sport team or whatever. But this helped me stand out. So I thought, whoa, I got to keep going with this. And then that obnoxious thing in the sky had to be there and draw my attention. It's like, what in the world? Because I guess as a movie maker, I understood the special effects and the fantasy and the, all of that. watching Lost in Space when I was a kid and Star Trek and all. I knew what that stuff was. I had the book Making of Star Trek, so I understood all that. But then you're standing there in 3D reality with your friends around you, and you look up, and you actually see something. Like, this is not a movie lot. This isn't a studio lot. What the heck is that that I'm looking at? You know.
And, well, what does it look like?
Yet, I always used to describe it to people. There was this, it was going through the clouds, and I don't know precisely, but on average, cloud elevation is around 11,000 feet. And it was heading north, and what I saw out of this cloud, it's a bright, sunny day, this, like, pewter gray circular object. I always describe it like if you take a front tire from a 747 and lay it on its side, about like that. And then on where the tread would be, there was this dull, red, ever so slow kind of pulsing light. And it dipped out of the clouds just enough that I caught a glimpse of this pulsing light, and then it went back up into the clouds. And needless to say, at 14, I'm mesmerized by this thing. And I told my friends, hey, it's heading towards the airport. And we all jumped on our bikes like we were going to catch this thing and rode down to local park. It was probably half a mile away. And when we got down there, there wasn't anything in the sky to see, but it seems to me like as we were riding our bikes down, I could see it still moving through the clouds. But that's what really started me on that trek, and it hasn't stopped since.
Well, you were lucky you had some friends there to, you know, corroborate what you were seeing, because I've talked to so many people who've seen UFOs, and you don't even believe your eyes sometimes.
You don't.
And what were you thinking? Were you thinking this is a alien craft, or what was going through your mind?
You know what? Just the fact that I was seeing this thing, aliens didn't enter my mind, outer space. Nothing entered my mind except, oh, my God, look at that. That was the only thing that entered my mind. And,
wow.
In fact, I'm not sure the other guys saw it, to be honest about it, because they had their eyes trained in the southeast sky, where I was looking for a few minutes with them. See, this whole, it started, because we have a lot to talk about tonight.
Right.
Neighborhood kids in the backyard came across from my house, came out of the backyard screaming that they were seeing this thing shooting red beamers. So I guess they meant red beams. Maybe it was the porthole, the pulsing light that they saw, I don't know, but they saw it independently, and they were pointing to the southeast sky. I was with my buddy. We walked across the street. Everybody's looking over there. I don't see anything, so I looked over to the north-south sky, and that's when I saw what I saw. So
right.
I don't know for sure that they saw exactly what I saw, but we all saw something.
Wow. So that's how it all began, huh?
That's how it all began. Yep.
And it wasn't just UFOs you kept running into. I mean, like ghosts. And, you know, I had a Bigfoot sighting as well. I told everyone about it after it happened. I couldn't talk about anything else. I didn't actually see it. I heard it roar like three times.
Oh, did you? Okay.
And I just went to visit a friend who said that she was having regular encounters. And,
really?
Major encounters. I mean, she had footprints. She had other witnesses. She saw it. She heard it. You know,
Where was this?
This was in Acton, right outside the Los Angeles National Forest, which is actually a big, it's a hot spot
Acton?
For Bigfoot. Yeah, the Lancaster.
A-C-T-O-N.
Uh-huh.
Acton, Acton, California.
Yeah, it's north of Los Angeles.
Right,
and,
is that up in kind of a mountainous area?
Yeah, it is. It's mountainous and forested, and that whole area is a huge hot spot. Lancaster, Quartz Hills, Palmdale. Turns out there's a long history.
I may have to go out there because there's a kind of an acquaintance of mine. I don't know if everybody will remember Linda Blair from The Exorcist.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, she has her animal refuge in Acton, California.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So this gives me a little bit of reason to trek out there. And then knock on her door while I'm there.
you know, I'm interested to hear your stories, because I also have seen ghosts. You know, I've done a lot of ghost research. I first saw my mother's ghost after she died and got into researching that. So I'm interested to hear your Bigfoot story.
Oh, boy. Well, I'll make it brief because, like I say, we got a lot to cover.
Yeah.
My Bigfoot story happened September 14th and 15th of 1976. It was shortly after my graduation that year, and I had... It's kind of embarrassing. I've been through a relationship with a brown belt that had gotten her black belt. That's how I actually got into karate. I followed my girlfriend into karate. But, you know, it was over, and I was the last one to know it. And a buddy of mine was saying, hey, you know what? The best way to forget about a woman is with another woman. And I was like, oh, come on, no. So I acquiesced, and he arranged a double date with he and his girlfriend and a girlfriend of hers. And we wind up out at a county park out here in St. Louis County called Crevecoeur Park. And Crevecoeur Park has three sections to it, and we were at the lower section by the lake. And it's Mike and I and two girls, and we're kind of stopped two-thirds of the way down in the parking area. And there's an uphill area with woods, and then there's the lake. The lake is in front of us. The woods are in back of us. And my date had absolutely no interest in this type of thing. I mean, Mike and his girlfriend are doing their business in the back seat, and this is the girl I'm with. It's her very, very first date. So I'm, you know, like, okay, this feels real uncomfortable. So I have karate testing the next morning, you see. So I told her, I said, if anybody needs me, I'll be outside of the car practicing. So I did. I stepped out, went out, was doing some katas. And maybe 5 minutes in, I hear something at my car. I had a 67 Chevy station wagon. And I look over, and my buddy is jumping out of the back passenger door with his fist up. He was a Golden Gloves. Like he's going to pound something. And what is wrong with him? You know, I'm thinking. And he calls me over to the car. He says, you've been messing around in the car? I said, why? No, I'm over here practicing. Why would I come? Why? What are you talking about? And he had this real perplexed look on his face. Now, I knew him from drama class, but he was not that good of an actor. He had this look on his face, and he said, I was back in the back seat, you know, Cindy and I were blah, 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 and I happened to look at the door, at the window on the passenger side, and I saw the shadow of this hand, and he put both his hands up. You know, it was double the size of his hands.
Wow.
And he said that he told the girls, hang on, I think Jill's going to try to play a trick on us. So he's trying to get himself quietly maneuvered because he's going to spring and surprise me. Except peripherally, he catches out of his eye, I am over on the other side. And he looks back at the window, and now there are two shadows of hands, huge hands. So he scrambles to open the door up. It's locked. He's got to stop, unlock the door, and then finally gets out. By the time he's out there, there is nothing around except me. And I said... Huh. Mike, I don't have any idea what you're talking about, man. I haven't had my eyes off my car more than 10 seconds at a time. There hadn't been anything out here. I don't know what you're talking about. So, we get back in, and the girls are terrified. My date has a single tear coming down her left cheek, and she's dead face, dead serious, looking straight ahead. Can we please go home now? Yeah, no problem. So actually what we did was we took them to some place to get them a soda or something to calm them down, and then we took them home. And they lived approximately 40 minutes from Crevecoeur. Okay. So Mike and I are thinking about this. I'm thinking, even when I was out there, I was on the driver's side of the car. The shadows were on the passenger side of the car. A couple of cars did come by, you know, with their headlights on, because we were there at 12:20 p.m. And I stopped doing any kind of kata because, well, I didn't want these guys to think I was freaking out or anything. So even if I had my hands up, any shadow cast would have been on the driver's side, not the passenger side. So, you know, I'm trying to think of every logical explanation I can on this. And we decide to go back and find out who's messing with people. So we go back to the park. This time we go all the way down and park by the falls. The falls lead off into the woods. So I've got the car turned off, headlights off, windows cracked to hear if anybody comes up on us. Next thing I know, Mike's going, there's something over there by the path. And I'm looking, pitch black. I can't see anything. I said, what are you talking about? It's right over there, man. Now it's moving along the tree line. So I'm like, okay, I can't see what you're talking about. And he gives me this annoyed look. It's 12:20 in the morning. He's tired. I'm tired. And he's pointing with his left arm across his chest, okay? This is right over there. And he with his right hand, he's kind of pinching his eyes, trying to rub him. He's tired. So I lean over, and I look. I follow that line where he's pointing. And up in the air, between two trees, I see something absolutely massive move between two trees. I can see the furry outline. I can see the head, typical conical shape, and an arm swaying movement. And
wow.
I'm thinking, oh, no. Oh, no. So I start the car. I said, you know, I'm thinking in my head, I may be a martial artist, and he may be Golden Glove, but no, this we're not doing this. So I start the car up, and he says, wait a second. Let's see if we can get a better look. I'm thinking, well, I've got the car started. All I have to do is drop it in gear and floor it. I said, okay. All right. I've got a safety margin here. So it's moved back. When I saw it between two trees, it was against the overcast sky. There was a slight moon out, so I was seeing it against the clouds.
Right.
And he says, looking at us. Now I'm getting panicked. Whatever this thing is looking at my car. And the only thing I can think of, Preston, is how am I going to explain this to my car insurance if something happens? You know,
how far away is this thing?
I'm going to guesstimate that it was probably 35 yards.
Wow.
From where we are in the circle to where those trees were. And there was a sizable ditch between us also. So I'm like, okay, I want to see what it is looking at my car. Now, Mike's looking out his window. He doesn't see what I'm doing. So I reach up on the dashboard, and I turn the headlights on. And as soon as the lights come on, he's screaming, oh, my God, go, 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 go. It's like, that's the cue. Drop it and drive and hit the accelerator, which is what I did. And I drove us out of the park down to, I don't know if any of your listeners are familiar with the area I'm talking about, that there was a Steak and Shake, a restaurant at 270 and McKelvey, essentially, where we were. And I pulled in the parking lot, and everything was normal again. It's like, did that really happen? Because everything's really nice and normal now. Everything's nice and normal. And from that night, for the next 5 years, I did investigation on that. I couldn't get it out of my head. In fact, what happened to me was I had my karate testing the next day, and I did fine with everything else, and I got up to spar, and my mind went back to seeing that thing moving between two trees. I completely left the dojo. My head was someplace else. And what brought me back was the people that were there doing this kind of, because apparently the guy facing off of me must have done a move at me, and I didn't move. My eyes were glazed. And I came back just in time to finish, you know, finish that particular thing, and I did get in trouble. But anyway, yeah, it just impressed me that much that I lost complete concentration in my karate testing. And that never happened. I was at the top of the class at that time.
Wow.
I've been taking first place in kata in tournaments, I was the only white belt being taught the brown belt kata because my sensei was afraid that I would lose interest. So it impacted me very definitely. And like you said, you know, when you have that experience, it changes your life. It really does.
Yeah.
How about you?
Certainly changed. I mean, I grew up very skeptical of all this stuff and heard about a UFO sighting on the news in, I think, 1986 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And made the mistake of asking my friends and family what they thought of this ridiculous hoax or, you know, this misperception.
Really? Uh-huh.
And that's when I found out that my brother had seen a UFO, chased it in a car with his friends. My sister-in-law. I would say probably a third of the people I knew had had some sort of major encounter with, you know, either a ghost or a UFO.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, some of these people were actually abducted, and I've known them for years and years. So it hit me really hard, very, very hard, like a ton of bricks.
Yeah. So in your case, you know, you read about something, and then you opened it up to the family, and all of a sudden you're getting all these stories.
Right.
By people that you respect, people you trust.
Right. I always tell people, if you don't believe in UFOs, well, you should probably ask everyone you know, and I think you'll be in for a real shock that some of these people are probably keeping secrets from you.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. You know, in fact, now that you bring that up, there was a time in my career where I was working for a cable television station in St. Charles, Missouri. And this particular year was 1986. You just mentioned 86. And I had a lot of functions to go out in the field and grab video from, to bring back and make shows out of them. And it seemed like every public event that I went to, and I don't remember how it came up, but somebody had to tell me about their experience with a UFO, with a ghost, with something.
Huh.
And that must have happened 6 or 7 times. Unsolicited. I don't know. I must have had UFO investigator tattooed on my forehead or something. I don't know.
That is so funny you say that. I've had that same experience. You know,
really?
A lot of people, you know, in my family circle and friends, mm-hmm. you know, they know I'm into this subject, but I've had people who have no idea who I am walk up to me and start telling me their UFO story. And,
Isn't that the weirdest thing?
It is bizarre. You have to ask yourself, is there something else going on?
Well, you know, you may have hit on something there. You may have hit on something. Because I knew an abductee that said she could meet somebody and just know that they were also an abductee. She just knew.
Right.
I mean, not everybody she met, but those that were, and she'd mention it, and they'd start talking to her about it.
Well, it certainly is fascinating stuff, and it hits people right in the core of their beliefs. And I think some people who are skeptical can get really upset if you try to convince them.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't bother with skeptics. I mean, someone who's got a healthy skepticism, I'll usually, you know, they'll make some kind of a comment, and my opening line is, well, you're probably not informed enough, because, you know, and then I'll start in, and I'll give them a timeline, and they'll just be listening to me, you know, like, wow, really? Really? I said, yeah, go check it out. Yeah.
It's true. Yeah, I think skeptics vastly underestimate the amount of evidence for all these subjects, UFOs, ghosts, and what, Bigfoot, definitely.
Well, they do because they haven't experienced it, and that's the key. That really is the key. It's a very personal experience when you encounter anything in the paranormal, whether it's having a UFO sighting or if you're an abductee, which I am, if it's Bigfoot, if it's an encounter with spirit, and that seems to be going on more and more. Spirit encounters. I've had, let's see, I want to say probably 5 cases this year of that, and where we actually had to cleanse the house.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're keeping pretty busy. Well, everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and tonight our guest is Joseph Palermo. And we're talking about a wide variety of subjects, and I promise we'll get to the chupacabra soon for all of you who are waiting. But any of you out there have questions or you'd like to share a story, this is a call-in show, and I will give out the toll-free number right now, so grab your pen or pencil and a piece of paper, and here it is. It is 888-228-4494. I'll repeat that again, 888-228-4494. We'd love to hear from you. If you have a story to share or a question to ask or a comment to make, give us a call.
Please do.
All right, now, Joseph.
Yeah.
You've had all these experiences. I have so much I want to ask you. But before we get to the chupacabra.
We may have to do two shows, you know that.
I think so. Can you share your ghost encounter story?
My ghost encounter story. Well, there's more than one, but I'll give you the main one. There's a place here in St. Louis called the Lemp Mansion. It's fairly famous around the country because it's supposed to be like the most haunted place in the Midwest. And at this time, I had some what I call my metaphysical mentors, Dave and Phyllis DeCristo. And they used to be part of a group called the St. Louis Psi Squad, which is now the U.S. Psi Squad, that was founded by world-famous psychic Bevy Jakers. And each year they would get a call from a local television station, KMOX Radio, to do, one of their personalities, I think it was Jim White. Jim White Spooktacular. He'd always do a show the night before Halloween, because of the season. And this particular time, they were going to do a live broadcast from the Lemp Mansion. Briefly, it's thought that the reason that the Lemp Mansion is haunted is because the Lemp Mansion was of the Lemp family, and they were a brewing family. Lemp beer was what they brewed. And for whatever reason, there were a number of deaths and suicides in this building of the family. So, people over the years would have experiences, especially in the kitchen area and this and that and the other. So this year they invited, a number of people to go to this, and Dave and Billis thought I should go. And I said, I don't know anything. I've had a few big experiences, but I don't know what you guys know. He said, just come on, it'll be fun. And wear your Dracula outfit, because that's what I would do on Halloween is be Dracula. So we go, and I'm dressed in the classic Dracula outfit with the stand-up collar and the whole nine yards. So I'm at the table, they go around, and I say just a few words, and then I scoot back from the microphone. I don't want to be part of this broadcast, because I feel like I don't have any experience really to contribute. So I'm sitting back against the wall in my chair, and I feel the collar on my cape, the right tip of it, bend down and then flips my hair back. I had long hair back then. And I looked, it's like, and Phyllis is standing next to me with her arms crossed and her coat in her, draped over her arms. And I said, Phyllis, is there something around us? And she closed her eyes for just a moment, then she smiled, and then she just looked forward. It's like, oh, no. No, 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 no. This can't be happening to me. So a little bit later, Ray Jagers, husband of Bevy, is standing next to me, and I feel three taps on my right arm. And I look over him and said, what? And he looks at me and says, huh? I said, didn't you just tap? And I realize that his hands are in his pockets. Oh, man, this is not good. Okay, you're loaded for bear. This is not happening. Why? So a little bit later, the psychic team is allowed to go upstairs where the public is not allowed to go to do their ghost hunting investigation. And this is back before ghost hunters. This is back before all the toys and all that stuff. This was the old-fashioned ghost hunting. For those who don't know, is where you get at least a team of three psychics, and they start moving around in different rooms. What they're sensing, they write down on a pad of paper. They all compare notes, and usually there's one, maybe two rooms that they all felt something in, so then they converge on that room to see what they can get. All done very quietly and very boringly. And so we're upstairs, and Dave and Phyllis are doing their thing, and it's boring. So there's this room next to the room that we're in, and I wonder what's in that room. So I go over to the door jamb, and I'm looking. So I'm going to go in that room. And my body knew better than I did. I managed to get my right foot over, and I'm straddling the threshold now. Like, oh, come on, don't be a baby. Just go in. So I did. I stepped about, you know, five steps into the room, and my eyes are adjusting to the darkness, and I can start to see, like, sheets covering a couch or a box. Okay, this is a storage room. And there's a window in front of me that looks out over the carriage house, and then you can see the highway further. I thought, oh, well, okay, I see what... And then I stop, and I see this... What the best way I can describe it is like heat inversion, like that wobbly, you know, invisible... You know, like when you're driving on a day and you can see that heat right at the top of the road.
Right, kind of a distortion.
Yeah, that distortion, exactly. And I see this distortion, and it has a human shape to it. And I'm like, what the... And before I can say anything, this thing rushes at me, and I'm all of a sudden feeling like I'm in a complete vacuum. And I can't take a breath in. And it felt like, and the only way I've ever been able to describe it was like on Star Trek when they're beaming people on and off the ship. It felt like that. There was just tingling all over the place. And I had enough breath left in me to call out Phyllis's name, and she came in and caught me by the shoulders just as my knees buckled. And she took this deep breath, and she said, oh, we need to get you out of here. So they took me out. They got Bevy. And apparently there was something in that room. She found it. And there was a whole lot more that happened, but that was my first real encounter with a spirit. Of course, I've learned a lot since then, and I know how to sense spirit with my hand, and I can deal with spirit. You know, spirit doesn't you know, frighten me or anything like that anymore, because now I know. But when you don't know, woo-hoo, man.
It's interesting, because, you know, I've done a lot of ghost research and always considered myself kind of logical and, you know, level-headed, but after you begin to do this for a while, you definitely do sort of get a sense of the energies. I mean, you can sense it. So
yes.
I've had that. I've been poked a few times and had my hair pulled a little bit and things like that. But so I totally get where you're coming from.
Yeah, and you know, usually what that means is spirit can sense you, and they're trying to get your attention. They want to talk, but I don't do that. I don't have that gift of being able to talk. So I usually contact a psychic friend of mine, Joyce Owlwoman, and she and I often team up in dealing with things like that.
Wow, so you've made kind of like a career of this. I mean, you're pretty busy researching not only UFOs but ghosts as well.
I don't have an option. At least I don't feel like I do. You know, I mean, somebody, you know, finds you and says this and this and this, and there's fear in their voice, and they want it to stop, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, okay, you know, we can come out and investigate and, you know, see if there's really something there, and if there is, we can take care of it, no problem. You know, but you just don't want to leave people in a lurch, especially when there are children involved and, you know, children are being, you know, bothered by it. So, you know, we try to help people.
Right. Well, it's interesting. I love investigating all aspects of the paranormal because I think, to a certain extent, they are related. And I wrote a book, Supernatural California, which basically explored all the supernatural elements of California, from UFOs to Bigfoot to even some chupacabra sightings.
Chupacabra.
There weren't a lot of them. You know, I found about four or five cases here in California, and they were pretty consistent. So what... Is this is it a new phenomena? Is this an ET? Is this a government experiment? What are your theories? And I mean, how did you get involved in chupacabra research?
Well, how I got involved, a late friend of mine, Bob Buck, had brought a faxed illustration of this. We're talking the Puerto Rican chupacabra,
right.
Not what has been called the chupacabra in Texas. Those are canines in Texas. Those are not what I consider to be true chupacabra. Okay,
right.
I'll grant the people in Texas. Those are some weird looking canines, but
I think those are not. Yeah.
Those are not chupacabra, like from Puerto Rico. Anyway, Bob had brought a faxed illustration he'd gotten from researcher Jorge Martin in Puerto Rico to a Illinois MUFON meeting, Mutual UFO Network, that was being held in Collinsville, Illinois at the time. And Bob was also working to promote this upcoming expedition to Puerto Rico in search of paranormal, but especially the chupacabra. And because it had been being reported at that point, it's just not quite massively yet in the mass media. And I looked at this thing, and it just looked like the most bizarre, made-up, B-grade horror monster creature, you know, like from a B-movie that I'd ever seen. It's like, this can't possibly exist.
The hooves and scales on the back and all this.
Yeah,
the
chupacabra that I have come to understand has three toes and three fingers with claws on them, with the feet probably more bird-like than hooves. And there was a lot of confusion about what this thing looked like down there because someone had mentioned the hooves thing, and the witness said, no. Three-toe claws.
Wow.
Claws. Okay, because I was looking around to see if I could see any footprints. We were on an actual investigation. We had been in the office of the mayor of Canovanas, Puerto Rico, when this call came in. It was like the last day of our trip, and so we had permission to go to follow the civil defense team as they went out. The civil defense is the team dispatched to deal with the chupacabra sightings and attacks. So, now, while I didn't get to actually see a chupacabra, the witnesses that we talked to all gave the same description. We're talking about 3.5 to 4 foot tall. We're talking the body of a kangaroo, very powerful upper legs that then go down into these smaller, thinner legs, having hair. Sometimes it's gray hair, sometimes it's brown hair, sometimes apparently even a green shimmer to it. Some of them would have black spots on them. And this very strange quill feather-like thing that starts at the crown of their head and goes and follows down the back of the skull and down the spine. And apparently when this thing gets excited, these things will stand up, kind of like a porcupine. But it doesn't throw them off. These things stand up, and then they quiver horizontally, and they're multicolored.
Huh.
The head looks very similar to a gray. The eyes are elongated around, actually kind of to the side of this thing's head. We had one witness that was talking to us. She had a daylight sighting of this thing. This thing wasn't any more than like 3 foot from her. It was just kind of sauntering down the sidewalk there and stopped, happened to stop. She was coming out of her mother's antique store there. And there it was in like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. She said the eyes were jet black. And she, because of the elongated around the temple, she got the idea that even if it was looking straight ahead, it could like roll the eye over and look at her, kind of like a lizard might.
Right.
And there's so much to be told about the chupacabra. If we want to go into some of the lab results, we can do that. Yeah. Not of the chupacabra, but of animal victims of the chupacabra. The reason that the chupacabra came to such high profile was because not only was it attacking domestic animals, but it was attacking agricultural animals. I mean, chupacabra, English translation from Spanish, means goat sucker. Goats were the first victims of this thing. And there's a veterinary named Jose Soto who volunteered his time and his resources to do necropsies, autopsies on these animals. And some really bizarre stuff, man. Number one, there was no saliva in any of the puncture wounds.
Okay.
So, and I pondered that for a long time. And as I was putting my documentary together, thank you for mentioning that at the beginning of the program, as I'm editing and putting this together, when I heard no saliva, I thought, well, then what are these puncture wounds? And typically, they're grouped in six, you know, three pairs. And I thought, the claws on this thing's hands. This thing isn't biting them. It's grabbing them with its hands. And that's the three and the three is what's making these apparent six puncture wounds.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. That explains no saliva. So then as the doctor would go a little bit further, you know, there would be, you know, puncture wound number one and not much around it. As he's peeling back the layers of skin, he might find two to four more wounds, nothing from the outer skin, but on the interior. And he would trace one puncture wound might go to the heart, and there might be strips of the heart muscle removed. Another one might go to the liver, strips of the liver removed. Another to a kidney. It's like this thing was taking field samples somehow. And the one thing that he did mention, because all the stories that you hear about chupacabra, you know, it's like a vampire and all the animals are drained of blood. No. False. False.
Huh.
Of all the animals that he necropsied about 2,000 at that point. Of
wow.
all those animals, he said, some have the same amount of blood they're supposed to have, others have a little lesser blood. He said, but I have never, ever seen an animal that was drained of blood.
So do you think these things are intelligent then?
I think they're either intelligent or under some kind of intelligent control. There's a key feature to the chupacabra that is almost never talked about, and that is at night, it apparently projects, projects a red light beam out of its eyes, out of both eyes.
I have heard this.
Right. Well, yeah. You know, if people see my documentary, they'll hear from eyewitness testimony about these beams coming out of the eyes.
Well, there are some animals that can do that. I mean, fireflies, for example.
Well, fireflies have a luminescent tail that glows.
Right.
It's not a beam of light. One eyewitness, Carmen Martinez, who lived on the mountainside, said, you know, she could, it's like two flashlight beams coming out of this thing's eyes. And she says sometimes that's how she can tell that there's a chupacabra around, because she can look out and see these red, two separate red beams. She says, like, just like out of the cartoons, shining down on the ground and shining on leaves and looking around.
This is bizarre. I mean, what is this? This is a relatively new phenomenon as well, right? I mean, we don't have historical evidence.
As far as we know. Now, here's the problem. Different people, when they see chupacabra, mean different things. And most of what we hear about are probably something else, because a lot of what I've looked into has not matched the MO of the chupacabra of Puerto Rico. Okay?
Right.
Case in point, this weird thing that washed up on the beaches at Montauk this summer. Very bizarre looking thing. You know, they even had, Jeff Corey from the Sci-Fi Channel? I forget. But he's like, well, that's a raccoon. And I'm like, in what part of the world is that a raccoon? This thing doesn't look anything like a raccoon. I mean, I'm in Missouri. We got plenty of raccoons here. No, this is not a raccoon. I don't know what it was, but you know, over the years there have been a number of very, very bizarre, strange creatures that are witnessed, and I don't know if there's somebody out there doing genetic experimenting. I don't know if we've got a blending between dimensions where these things are, you know, popping up for a while and then popping out for a while.
Has anyone ever seen them disappearing? Or, I mean, is there a UFO connection at all to this thing?
As far as I'm concerned, no. Now, there have been attempts to tie the chupacabra to UFOs, just like there's been attempts to tie Bigfoot to UFOs. I used to have a Bigfoot casebook written. It had two authors. It was gifted to me back in like 1988, but it had 1,000 documented Bigfoot reports. Not one of those involved anything with UFOs.
Right.
People will have a Bigfoot sighting or hear a Bigfoot scream or whatever, and then maybe 3 days later or 3 days before, there may be UFO sightings in a similar area. So people want to make the leap saying that, well, the Bigfoots come from UFOs. I don't think so.
It's interesting you say that because, you know, like, I didn't want to investigate Bigfoot. For whatever reason, I was skeptical even after investigating UFOs. But I kept running into cases. And I think the first three or four I investigated did have an apparent UFO connection. But after investigating, I saw that the connection was loose at best, and as you say, maybe 0.01% of Bigfoot cases have anything at all to do with UFOs. So
right.
I don't know what the connection is, but it's not strong at all.
No, I don't think so either.
I think there's a little bit of one, though, but I'm not sure what it is.
Well, now, you know, I'm a truth seeker. If someone could actually say, yeah, there were five of us, and this UFO came down near the ground, and then there was this blue beam that hit the ground, and suddenly there was a Bigfoot in front of us. Okay, maybe a holographic projection. You know, I don't know. I just and maybe there's a creature that is very similar to what we have as a Bigfoot creature, because we have to remember that the Bigfoot legend goes way back.
Oh,
you know. Indians have you know, on totems and have in their stories about these wild, you know, man beasts and this and that and the other, you know, all over the world, and it dates way back. Not that UFOs don't also date way back, but I've not until the past, I'm going to say, 15 years maybe, did I start to hear about a, you know, potential, quote-unquote, UFO Bigfoot incidents.
Right.
And I just haven't had any witnesses, any research that, like you say, once you start investigating, it's a very, very loose connection at best. You know,
right.
it just doesn't work for me. I mean, I would be more inclined to think, if I'm going to do that, I would be more inclined to think that Bigfoot is some kind of perhaps interdimensional creature. And if a UFO comes in the area, there may be some radiation or energy that comes from that UFO that opens that veil between dimensions and causes the Bigfoot to be able to be seen where otherwise it wouldn't be being seen.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know,
who knows?
I'd be more inclined to think that than the other way around.
Well, back to the chupacabra. Is it all across the world? I mean, how many do you think there are? Is it still going on?
You know, those are two very good questions. And I say that because around the world, after I got home from the expedition, you know, I mean, it went on for about a year. Almost every, and this is back when Dreamland was hosted by Art Bell and it was on Sunday nights. Almost every Sunday night for at least 3 months, another chupacabra story from someplace. The problem that we have, Preston, is that there's not really investigation going on with a lot of these cases. You know, just like with ufology, you've got a handful of people that are interested enough to spend their nickel to drive 3 hours to site, to location, you know, interview the eyewitnesses if there is any kind of footprints or anything, you know, do that. Most of us in the field don't have the financial resources to say, okay, we have this dead animal. Where is the nearest laboratory or that or whoever that can check into this? This is costly. I mean, you've got people like Linda Blair that I mentioned earlier who are doing legitimate animal rescue. They can't pay the bills. You know what I'm saying? So where am I going to find the money to take this, the corpse of this dog, bull, horse, whatever, that's dead under mysterious conditions, and get it investigated? I can't do that. So that's part of the issue we have, and we had, because there were reports of chupacabra all across the southern coast of the United States, stretching from Florida all the way to where you're at. You know, and you heard of some.
Absolutely.
You know, how many of those were you able to actually, you know, get to and try to investigate?
None, actually. They were
none.
All, you know,
well,
all
you know,
hearsay,
it,
all of them.
It, you know, you and I are in the same boat, pal. You know, it's like we got to pay the electric bill. We got to have food on the table. You know, we're not wealthy people with a lot of disposable income that can just run about and do this. You know,
right.
the 1996 expedition to Puerto Rico, I hope it wasn't a one-time thing. I would like to find backers to be able to, you know, go and do more research, because I think there's a lot to learn. Now, when you get on a path, however, just in case anybody's out there is listening that, you know, government or military or whatever, if you start investigating something and it leads into potential government or military involvement, you start getting into touchy territory there.
Right.
You know,
right.
I personally think that one of the reasons that, for example, in ufology, that we've not been able to go anywhere near the distance, and why there's been such, to coin Stanton T. Friedman, you know, blackout on all the freedom of information requests he's gotten, is because if you're able to get this case and look at everything that's on file, it may have other stuff in it, not UFO related, but very, very important information that the general public doesn't need to know, and we as researchers don't need to know.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure, yeah.
So that could be a lot of the cause of the secrecy. And I don't care to know what secret ops things, you know, let me lead my life and let me learn about these things that are impacting my life as much as I can. Let me learn about the spirit realm. You know, can we communicate with spirit? What can we find out about the other side by communicating with spirit? You know, Bigfoot, fascinating. You know, where are these things? Why are they? You know, why do they seem so afraid of humans? Why do they, you know, and conversely, why is it that most reports that I've heard, when you've got a hunter out in the woods and they see something 25, 30 yards away, and they, oh, there's a bear, I'm going to get me a bear, and they bring that rifle up and they look through that scope that brings them right up on the face of this thing, and it turns and looks at them, and they say, oh my God, that looks human. And they won't shoot it.
Right.
You know, lots of cases like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So how much more time do we have?
We're right there at the end of the show, actually. We used up all our time.
Oh,
but
boy.
It's been pretty
interesting. Yeah. Well, we can always do another show. I'm available.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I'd definitely like to have you back. You've got a lot of interesting information. I've got more questions to ask, but yeah,
absolutely.
We are out of time.
Well, I've got at least four other ghost stories to tell you, and the Bigfoot thing, like I said, that was 5.5 years of research. Lots
wow.
of interesting stuff there. So,
all right. Well, I'll definitely have to have you back.
Cool.
Well, thanks, Joseph. It's been a blast.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for. And we'll definitely have you back on the show.
Okay, buddy.
All right, well, everyone, that's our show for tonight. I hope you've enjoyed it. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight has been Joseph Palermo. And we've been talking about everything from UFOs and ghosts to Bigfoot and Chupacabra, you name it. It's happening here. And that's it for tonight. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you can join us next week when I bring on another exciting guest. Until then, have a wonderful night and a great week. Bye now.